My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Germany is dropping its opposition to a ban on Russian oil imports, bringing the European Union a step closer to sanctioning Moscow's powerful energy industry.
Slashing that revenue stream will hurt the Russian war effort and more broadly the Russian economy.
Plus, another big day of tech earnings, where Apple, Amazon, and Twitter stand. And Mind the Gap, why more high school seniors are taking a break before college. It's Thursday, April 28th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. President Biden is asking Congress for an additional $33 billion to support Ukraine with military, security, and humanitarian aid, and provide longer-term assistance. The proposal includes funding for weapons and ammunition, as well as basic services for civilians. Speaking from the White House today, Biden called Ukraine's battle against Russia a fight for freedom.
The cost of this fight is not cheap, but caving to aggression is going to be more costly if we allow it to happen. We either back Ukrainian people as they defend their country, or we stand by as the Russians continue their atrocities and aggression in Ukraine.
The president says the money would help Ukraine through the end of September, adding that a previously approved $13.6 billion aid package is nearly exhausted. The war in Ukraine is now entering its third month. The U.S. economy shrank in the first quarter, its first contraction since the early days of the pandemic, when COVID-19 lockdowns pushed the nation into a brief recession. The Commerce Department says gross domestic output fell at a 1.4% annual rate. That may sound scary compared to the annual growth rate of 6.9% that we saw in the fourth quarter. But our labor economics reporter, Sarah Cheney Cambon, says the fundamentals of the economy are strong.
Economists expect growth to resume as soon as the second quarter. And that's because the categories that drove GDP down in the first quarter were things like trade and inventories, and they shouldn't be a drag in the second quarter. And economists say that consumer spending is really strong, businesses are investing, and so we should see growth throughout the rest of the year that is actually stronger than it was in the decade preceding the pandemic.
More first quarter earnings came today. Twitter reported its revenue rose 16%, and more users joined the platform as the company prepares to be taken over by Elon Musk and go private. But the results may not mean much, since Musk is expected to implement changes to Twitter's business model. Twitter said it wouldn't host a call with analysts and was withholding all previous goals and outlooks because of the pending sale. More first quarter earnings came today. Twitter reported its revenue rose 16%, and more users joined the platform as the company prepares to be taken over by Elon Musk and go private. But the results may not mean much, since Musk is expected to implement changes to Twitter's business model. Twitter said it would not host a call with analysts and was withdrawing all previous goals and outlooks because of the pending sale. U.S. stocks rallied ahead of a slew of after-the-bell tech earnings. The Dow rose more than 600 points, or 1.9%. The Nasdaq was up 3%, and the S&P 500 added 2.5%. As for those after-the-bell earnings, Apple posted one of its best quarters in its 46-year history. Revenue rose 9% to $97.3 billion, far exceeding analyst expectations. Sales of the iPhone and Mac computers were up 5% and 15% respectively from the same time a year ago, also beating analyst expectations. The results likely benefited from the company's ability to navigate supply chain challenges that have been roiling the tech and auto industries. But investors will follow CEO Tim Cook's comments on a conference call later for any signs of slowing demand among high-end buyers amid high inflation, COVID-19 lockdowns in China, and the war in Ukraine. Amazon, on the other hand, posted its first quarterly loss since 2015. Sales growth slowed significantly in the first quarter, and the company has continued to deal with higher costs, labor issues, and a stall in online shopping. While Amazon posted 7% revenue growth in the first quarter, $116.4 billion, it lost $3.8 billion. The company's results were also affected by its stake in electric vehicle maker Rivian, which has seen its stock plunge by 65% this year. Amazon has an 18% stake in the company. And retail trading app Robinhood is also reporting a 43% revenue decline from the same quarter last year, the company's fifth consecutive quarterly drop. Robinhood signed up millions of new investors during the pandemic, but has lost 1.8 million users since March of 2021. Since the zero-fee brokerage relies on trading volume for revenue, markets reporter Paul Vigna says that's hurting the company's bottom line.
Retail trading is always going to be a very momentum-driven game. You're going to get people in on the promise of, you know, quick money and even maybe adventure for a lot of younger people. I mean, this was all one big game. You know, it's a lot of momentum driven activity as opposed to sort of institutional trading, which is always going to be about, look, we have all this money and we need to put it somewhere. Just put it somewhere safe and it'll earn us a return and whatever. The retail game is very, very different, and it's going to be up and down like this. The challenge for Robinhood is going to be, how do you get through these, you know, slower times?
The Biden administration has taken a big step toward a national ban on menthol cigarettes and all flavored cigars. The plan could pull more than a third of all cigarettes sold in the U.S. from the market and cut $20 billion in annual tobacco sales. It's the biggest federal move to curb cigarette sales since the FDA took regulatory control of the tobacco industry in 2009. The proposed menthol ban wouldn't take effect for at least 2 years. According to a Wall Street Journal analysis of data from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, U.S. menthol smokers have risen continuously, from under 31% in 2005 to 43% in 2020. Moderna is asking U.S. health regulators to authorize the use of its COVID-19 vaccine for children 6 months to 5 years old, after a study showed that the shot safely induced immune responses in the age group. Children under five are one of the last remaining age groups still not eligible for COVID-19 vaccination in the U.S. If approved, the kids could get the shots by the summer. An FDA spokeswoman said the agency can't reach a decision without additional data from Moderna. Coming up, Germany was the biggest European holdout for a ban on Russian oil. Now that they're on board, what it means for the EU and Russia. That's after the break.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Germany has been a staunch opponent of sanctioning Russia's powerful oil and gas industry. But that changed today. Germany now says it's ready to stop buying Russian oil. That clears a major hurdle to a broader European Union ban on crude imports from Russia, which all member nations must agree on. So what's behind the turnaround, and what could it mean for Germany and Russia? Joining me now with more from Berlin is our Wall Street Journal correspondent, Boyan Panchevsky. Hi, Boyan. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi. Always a pleasure.
So, Boyan, lots of other nations, including the U.S., have banned imports of Russian oil. How big of a deal is Germany's step today?
It's hugely significant because basically Germany was the handbrake for this decision to be made at the level of the European Union, which is the biggest single market in the whole world. So all the member states of the European Union calibrate the sanctions together against Russia and other nations when needs be. So essentially there was a push to banned the imports of Russian oil to the European Union, but because Germany was so dependent on Russian energy, that wasn't feasible for them until now, and now they've shifted. So it's a very, very significant move in that sense.
So tell us more about that. What's behind Germany's shift?
Essentially, what happened was before the war started on February 24th, about 35% of Germany's oil consumption was covered by Russia. That's a huge amount. And the Germans found themselves unable to replace that huge amount of oil quickly. And therefore, they opposed an embargo or any kind of ban of Russian oil flowing into Europe, because that would kind of severely damage their economy and leave them without an alternative supply. Now, what has happened since, they've been feverishly kind of working to find a replacement. And they did manage to kind of drum up a scheme together with Poland, and it essentially consists of the following. There is a port city in the west of Poland on the Baltic Sea called Gdansk, which has a very serious infrastructure to receive super tankers from around the world that carry oil. And it also has a link to a Russian pipeline that channels oil to Germany. So essentially, this deal between Poland and Germany stipulates that oil will be coming in through super tankers to the Baltic ports of Gdansk, and from there it will be received and channeled directly to the east of Germany. And that amount of oil that can be brought into Germany by that channel will be enough to replace what is now currently being imported from Russia. And that allows essentially Germany to shift and to say, okay, now we're good to have a ban of oil imports from Russia. They haven't set the date, though. That's important to say, that we don't really know when will this kick in, when will this come into force. But they've announced the mechanism, and they said, they told their European Union partners that they are lifting their veto, so to speak.
So what are the next steps here?
I mean, obviously, there are three main sources of energy that are being imported to Germany and Europe from Russia. It's coal, it's oil, and it's gas. They ticked off coal relatively early on because you can buy coal in many places. Oil is also not difficult to find, but it's turned out to be logistically difficult to replace Russian oil because of the simple fact that over the decades, the Soviet Union first and then Russia built a bunch of pipelines that channel oil directly to Germany. And when you have a pipeline, that's a much cheaper means of transport for oil and gas as well. So the Germans have become sort of complacent in that sense, because they even scrapped all of their railway wagons that were able to carry oil in the last 15 years, because they just banked on these pipelines. Cheap oil coming through pipelines, very easy. Just turn on the tap and it kind of comes at the other end. And that complacency is now over because of the war, because of the aggression on Ukraine. So they had to act very quickly. The next stage, the next chapter of this kind of battle to reduce or remove entirely Germany's and Europe's dependency on Russian energy is to get rid of gas shipments. And that would be very difficult because, unlike oil, gas is not easily found in that huge amount that is required to feed the European market. Experts are saying, and the German government has said, they will take them around 2 years or up to 2 years to replicate what they've done with coal and now with oil. You have to know that Germany is Europe's biggest economy. It's a country of 83 million people. It has a huge industrial base. It has a huge need for gas for the industry, but also for heating. I think around half of the households in Germany are heated with gas. So it's a very strategic asset. And in that regard, they're extremely dependent on Russia. Before the war, around 55% of Germany's enormous gas consumption was covered by Russia. So it is very difficult to replace that supply.
What is this likely to mean for Russia, which just this week said oil production is likely to be down as much as 17% this year?
Well, in the short term, obviously, it will hurt their revenues because the Russian economy is fueled by the sale of oil and gas and coal. But unlike with gas, I think it would also not be that difficult for Russia to find new markets because you can transport oils by super tankers. However, in the short term, it will hurt them because they are spending enormous amounts of money on their war effort in Ukraine, on their invasion of Ukraine. So that the state revenues are crucial to that. You have to know that the European Union in total collectively pays an estimated 1 billion euros every single day to Russia for gas, coal, and oil. So, you know, slashing that revenue stream will hurt the Russian war effort and more broadly the Russian economy.
That's Wall Street Journal Germany correspondent Bojan Panchevsky. Bojan, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And finally, in the early pandemic, many high school seniors took a gap year to avoid remote learning and get the full college experience. This year, students are minding the gap again, but for a different reason: rejection letters. Highly competitive schools saw applications skyrocket this year, and so acceptance rates at some selective schools dipped below 4%. Our reporter Alex Janin says most gap year students haven't given up on college entirely, but they're taking a more strategic approach for their applications next year.
Some of them, with the help of gap year consultants, are making a new list, maybe of less selective schools to apply to, but they're going through the reapplication process again. Over the summer, you know, they might choose to go on one of these gap year programs that is already laid out in design for them. That could include travel, it could include learning a new language, it could include, you know, an off-the-grid sort of hiking trip, or even courses that they didn't get to complete in high school that they wanted to take. It could also include job experience. You know, some people are really interested in getting some real-world work or internship experience on their resume for when they reapply. But most of them are writing new essays, getting new letters of rec, doing something to boost their applications that they didn't have the year before.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.